Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Alana K. Arnold and Charles Santoso, and a boy called Bat. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 343 of the podcast with Alana K. Arnold and Charles Santoso. Alana's newest chapter book is called A Boy Called Bat. Charles lent his talents in some beautiful spot illustrations throughout the story, and the person you'll learn about, quickly love, and find yourself rooting for is a boy named Bixby Alexander Tam, but you can call him Bat. Bat is different in some ways from his neurotypical peers, but the best way for you to find that out is to read and enjoy the story yourself and to get to know Bat personally. I think you'll love the person who greets you from the pages. Here is episode number 343 of the podcast with Alana K. Arnold and Charles Santoso. Welcome to the podcast, Alana and Charles. I'm glad that we get to connect. Where are we? Maryland and California and Australia, I believe, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow.
Hello.
We're doing it for real.
Hello.
Okay. Well, so Alana K. Arnold, author of A Boy Called Bat and many other fantastic books, would you please mind making introductions to the listeners?
I would be so thrilled to. So I am indeed Alana K. Arnold, and I am a writer as well as an animal lover. And I live in Huntington Beach, California, which is halfway between LA and San Diego. I spend my time surrounded by a number of animals, that number currently being 7, which is a low for me
nice.
Right now, but that's good. I like to tell my children that we're working on attrition, and they say we're not just waiting for our animals to die, so I'm glad they know what attrition means. And yeah, I'm just really, really excited to be talking with you today about A Boy Called Bat. Bat is my favorite character I've ever written, and it is such a pleasure to see his face drawn by the just so talented heart and hands of Charles.
Yes, and you.
Thank you.
You said a favorite. That makes me smile so much. I love that you have a favorite.
I have a favorite character for sure. I don't know if I have a favorite book, but,
no, that's
but right. I love Bat so much. And I love that this book is, it's just so, I think it's, when I look at it, it feels so tender and sweet and kind. And this is a time in our world where I just feel like we need more tender, loving kindness. And I'm so pleased that Bat exists and so excited for people to meet him.
You're going to have, sorry, Charles, just a moment. I'm going to introduce my friend, but
yeah.
You, Alana, are going to be touring these schools as you do as an author. And the fact that you love Bat the way you do, and I know having read the book that I love Bat, I think the way you do, and everyone who reads it will be that. This is going to be an amazing trip for you to have this character that is so beloved. I mean, the way that, I can't wait to ask you about how Bat walked onto your page. But first, let's turn to Charles. Charles Santoso, I'm so glad you're here. Could you make introductions?
Hey. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Matthew. So yeah, before I start, I have to say I love Bab too. I love this character. So okay, and then I'll move to my introduction. Now that I just want to continue from that conversation because I just while listening to Alana just now, I just have a big smile on my face. You know, it's so good to hear that. My name is Charles Santoso. So I live in Sydney, Australia. So I came from Indonesia. So that's where I was born. I'm an illustrator, and also I used to work in film before, but these days I focus into the world of wonderful books, pretty much picture books and chapter books, and that's what I do. Just draw, and then maybe start writing something too one day.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
I think Charles, you're downplaying the books that you've illustrated. These are Alana. I'm not sure how when Charles's work reached you as a librarian. These are books that are seldom on the shelf because we all want to read them aloud. And once you read aloud one of these books, they're never they don't get on the shelf again. And one in particular, the Snurch, Sean Farrell wrote the Snurch is. Oh my word! Your illustrations in this are, Charles, they are the kind of illustrations that beg for readers, for children to draw as well. They were your approach to that was just fantastic.
Thank you very much. I've been really lucky with the manuscript that I've got so far. So you know, I'm thankful for all the authors and then obviously all the editors and art directors that are trusting me.
It's certainly not luck though, because Charles is on the top of the list. I was given a few names, what do you think of these three? And I said, do you think we could get Charles Santoso? And so,
thank you.
Your reputation precedes you. So I wouldn't, I wouldn't put too much on luck.
Well, that's lovely. That's lovely. And to give a little context for the people listening, Alana, I'd love to invite you to share just a book talk of A Boy Called Bad. Let them know sort of what they're getting into with this wonderful middle grade novel you've shared with us.
Oh, I'd love to. So A Boy Called Bat is the first in a series of chapter books. I like to think of them as sort of, as far as length and number of illustrations, kind of like the Ramona books or the Clementine books. So it's a hardcover book with real care put into the production of the book, as well as, of course, the writing. And it's a story about a boy called Bat. And Bat is... his name comes from his initials. His name is Bixby Alexander Tam, and he's a lot of things. He's an animal lover. He's a yogurt aficionado. He's a counter of things. He is a boy on the autism spectrum. He's a boy who comes from a divorced family. He's a little brother, and he really, really, really hopes that he will soon be the care and keeper of one very special rescued skunk kit that his veterinarian mom brings home one day.
Yes.
Oh, the skunk.
That's awesome.
I had my uncle had a pet skunk for some time that he sort inherited.
So jealous.
A friend kind of thing. Yeah. So to see a child holding a skunk, I swear to you, there is a, I need to look for it, Alana, and send it to you. There is a photo of me somewhere at my mom's house of me. Like Charles illustrated me. It's amazing.
I would love to see that picture.
He had a skunk that was whatever you call it when you when they can't spray anymore.
Yes, yes. They descent them.
That's the word. Yeah, yeah. But and it was called Squeaker or Squeaky or something, and it made little squeaky noises, I remember. But that was adorable.
That's Bat's first name. He originally wanted to name his skunk, he wanted to name his skunk Stripey. So Stripey. It kind of reminds me of you with Squeaky.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Charles, to have you then to have you contribute illustrations to this novel too, much like as you're saying the Clementine books, Alana, I thought really were a nice touch in this. They were enough to lift some of the text in places that would just aid helping the reader have sort of a visual cue on what was going on.
Yeah, I guess especially with the chapter book, my is even more than other books. It's my role is actually pretty much, I would say like to fully serve the story. Just so the story is, because I have received such a great loving story, right? So I just can't help when I do all the illustration to actually just be affected by that. So thanks again, Alana. So for example, even with the cover, I did obviously as the usual steps is I do like some sketches and stuff, but something that I kind of like attracted to, or like something that I research a lot is the way bats see stuff, and the way his face look and feel, and how he sees and touch stuff. So, and then I guess like I'm so glad that the art directors and the editors actually choose the final cover here, because it's just I feel like it actually symbolizes his kind of like affection towards something, and then the eye contact, and then you know, obviously with Skunk, people always think like, oh, you know, it's kind of smelly or something like that, but to have him actually touching you know, the nose with his own nose is, I think, you know, I think it works quite well, and hope people think it's kind of like think that too.
Over and over again, I hear, oh, I love the cover. I love the cover. Can I hold it? And yeah, and we are so lucky, both of us, to work with Jordan Brown at Walden Pond Press.
Who's Jordan.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Yeah. I'm so grateful, because it was, you know, he was the person who put your name on the list that I got. I didn't get to choose, but I got to say, well, I really think that, and he said, I think so too. Yeah. So I felt so grateful that he brought your work to my attention.
Oh, thank you. It's always nerve breaking to me anyway. I mean, I don't know about other illustrators, but when I do it, I always feel nervous, because I put myself into it. So I don't know when it's out, how people will react to things, and I can't actually control that. So
welcome to my world.
yeah, I'm pretty sure the same with everyone. Yeah, so to hear like positive responses, you know, it's always great.
It's the feeling that everyone feels like only happens to them, but it happens to every single person.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, I would love to talk more. Charles, I'd love to talk about how the book came to you and your reactions, because I want to hear more about that. But first, I want to dig into the story a little bit, because Alana, for you to draw out this character that is on the autism spectrum, that does show these traits that some of us, as a teacher, I am familiar with children that have mannerisms like that. That was a character that I could really see, and I valued that it felt like you never once betrayed the endearing qualities of a child such as Bat. But what I was also really impressed with is that he was never labeled. It was never like, oh yeah, that's Bat, he has autism, let's keep talking about autism. But rather in the way you approached the story, as sensitively as you did, I felt like you were modeling to us as readers, and that includes me as a 36-year-old reader, that there are ways we can talk about other people that remove labels and see the person for who they are. So I want you to know that carrying throughout the story, I was continually impressed by sort of all the ways the onion was being peeled back, and we were seeing all these different parts of what makes up who Bat is, without ever saying, this is the thing we call what Bat is, because it's more complex than that.
Yeah, because Bat's more common. I mean, everybody is more than, you know, one thing. Like, you know, I could say I'm a Californian, or I'm a woman, or, you know, I could label myself, like I cut myself, you know, 100 different ways, and all of those would be true, but none of them would really give you, you know, a full picture of who I am. And I think when we have a trait such as autism, we tend to think of it as the one that's always in the foreground, because it can feel like that as a parent or an educator, or, you know, as someone who's working through what it means to be on the spectrum. But really, from a wider lens, it's one quality, the same as, you know, the fact that I'm a woman. So that was really important to me, that Bat's a whole person. His autism is part of who he is. It's the fabric of part of who he is, but so is, you know, his just deep and abiding love for animals and his strong passion for vanilla yogurt. Those matter just as much. So yeah, that was an interesting journey. I definitely, this book is a simple 20,000 word manuscript, but it's the result of a lot of research and a lot of heart searching and a lot of trying to make sure that I do right by people in my community and in my life that I love, who in various ways have inspired and touched on this book. And talking about the book is an interesting journey too, because again, it's a matter of people always want to know, like, where did these characters come from and where did these ideas come from? And part of that is, you want to respect the people whose lives you borrowed from, you know? Mm. And so that's been an interesting sort of pulling back for me too, you know, like how much do I share about my origin story and my character's origin stories? Because, you know, I want to be as respectful to the people in my life who inspired Bat as I, you know, as I want people to be to Bat. So that's been definitely been a new challenge for me, to have a character who's so beloved. So, you know, I'm so glad that people love him and they want to know where he comes from. Another thing that I've really learned from is to really pay attention to the own voices in the writing community. Yes. I'm a neurotypical. I think we're all on all the spectrums. Gender, sexuality, autism. And so, but I would say I'm pretty far to one end of it as far as my neurotypicality. So it was really important to me and luckily to my wonderful editor, Jordan, to reach out to own voices in the autism community for help. We did hire a sensitivity reader who was wonderful. And I just actually reached out myself to Temple Grandin, who is the writer of Animals in Translation and an autistic speaker and just a brilliant mind. And I was really pleased. Actually, I just heard back from her and she read Bat and said that she thinks that A Boy Called Bat will help children understand autism and people's connection to animals. And it was so meaningful to me to hear from someone who's in the community's heart to speak like that about my character.
I can imagine. I was going to ask about the reaction of the autism community, knowing full well that when you write a book like this, it comes from pieces of you, and it also comes from a place of wanting to honor and respect the other members of that community. So to hear that Temple was able to read it and share those thoughts is wonderful.
Yeah, it was really special to me. And it's scary, you know, to try to look in on a different perspective that is not your own. It's very naked feeling, it's such an honor to get to try.
But also, as scary as it is, there was something compelling you to do this, right? What brought you, other than these people I know you're saying in your life, there was this moment, I assume, that this story sort of brought itself to you, or maybe for you it was the character that brought that he presented himself to you. Are you able to talk with respect to the people that inspired this? Are you able to talk about that?
Well, I've been engaged with and interested in the autism community for a long time now, close to 20 years. And I had read several books over the years, one of which was called Born on a Blue Day, which is written by a man whose last name is Tammet. I can't remember his first name. He's a British man on the autism spectrum. He was called a savant. He's someone who sees in colors and shapes and can do incredible mathematical computations in his head. And he is also an autistic adult who's able to clearly explain to neurotypicals what the world looks like and feels like to him. Mm. So his book was fascinating to me. And I also read this wonderful book called Look Me in the Eye, written by John Elder Robison, who is an Aspergian adult who was raised in the 60s before high-functioning autism or Asperger syndrome were given those names. And he writes about his experience, which was profoundly moving to me. Also, everything by Temple Grandin as well. So those were some of my, you know, my sort of source materials that I read, you know, many years ago, not knowing they were source materials, just because I've always been drawn to and fascinated by neurodiversity. And then in my own community, I have met and worked with a number of people all over the spectrum, and spent a lot of time thinking about where I might fit on the spectrum as well. But Bat came to me kind of singularly. I was just driving along one day and I dropped off my daughter at rehearsal and was going to go to a coffee shop to work. and I was in the left-hand turn lane, and it was dark, and all of a sudden, this name popped into my head, Bixby Alexander Tam, and right away, I knew that that was my character, and that his initials spelled bat, and that he was on the autism spectrum, and that I loved him. And I knew him with such clarity. It was such a singular experience for me. I couldn't wait to get to the cafe and start writing. So I think all that front loading of research, you know, that I had done and thinking that I had done prepared me to write that in a way that I couldn't have anticipated when I was doing the research. So, yeah, that's where Bat came from. And I continued to do research throughout the writing and the revision. A lot of my research was not about autism spectrum. It was about animals and skunks. And how do I possibly make it so that a veterinarian mother would hand over an infant skunk to her son? Because, you know, skunks can carry rabies. How do I make that believable? So much interesting research. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to create the book.
That's amazing that the 20 years in the autism community served itself in sort of in the subconscious so that the main focus was like, okay, yeah, but will people believe that a mom would hand her son a skunk?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And that's, I don't know. I think that's what fascinates me about writing is that you don't know what work you're doing when you're doing it. It's not until you look back later and you say, oh, you know, all these other things are these threads. You know, I've been taking care of weird animals all my life too. So just these things that fed my interests, you know, which became my material. I couldn't have written this book 20 years ago. I couldn't have written any of my books 20 years ago. It's sometimes you just have to get older and have more experiences and just continue to be just fascinated by the world. The world is so fascinating. I think if there's anything that ties writers together, it's curiosity. Probably artists of all kinds, just a real curiosity about the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Wow. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with
us. Oh, I love hearing myself speak.
No, that's beautiful.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, so Charles, we just heard you and I just had the opportunity to hear about how Bat came to present a story to Alana. I would love to hear then how you became involved in this because of, I know you from illustrating picture books, but not, I don't personally know you yet from working on lending illustration to chapter books. And I imagine that's a different task to take on because of the illustrations taking on a different role, correct? So
yeah.
Please share the experience if you don't mind.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I did some covers for chapter book before, and I did some. I also did some interior illustration for chapter books before. But the interesting thing about like this publishing industry, any creative industry in general, anyway, it's always different, right? Like the story, I mean, the good ones anyway, it's always unique. So one day, as usual, I just work away and then suddenly, you know, email popped up and I received, you know, it's a proposal. It's kind of like, okay, we have this, chapter book. If you're interested in looking at it, you know, we would love to work with you and stuff. And it's always exciting. I always like feel kind of fortunate to get those email. Sometimes like something special, really special pops out, right? So a boy called Bat was one of them. So it's kind of like, as usual, the usual thing in my head is like, I didn't actually have any expectation when I actually opened the manuscript. So interesting title, I thought, you know, interesting title. So I just start reading. So when I start reading, I just couldn't stop. So pretty much just keep reading, and then kind of like getting more involved in, you know, the character. At one point, it's kind of like it hits me, and then tears fall from my from my eyes, my cheek and stuff. And you know, that those times usually is when, you know, I just have to rush back to my computer and type in email and say, it's like, get this one. I want this one. So so that's what happened with the with this book. It's lots of things. Like in the beginning, I was a little bit nervous because obviously the I didn't actually have too many experience with you know, meeting people with that has an autism spectrum. But when I actually read the story, I thought, like, I think this is like you know, knowing someone else. It's like trying to know someone else. So it's kind of like, so I just try to dig like my experience, my own experience, and also like my experience with talking with people and getting to know them and stuff like that, and then try to just kind of like feed myself with all this kind of like yeah, ideas or experience, and then after that I just shape the Bat's character, and then after that I just move on to, you know, the family and stuff like that, and then try to kind of like you know, visualize the world more. So yeah,
I like that. I like that you went about with Bat as if you were trying to get to know someone.
Yeah,
in the story. Because, yeah,
yeah, because it's kind of like it's always tricky, especially with kind of like to illustrate someone that, you know, you hope people will connect, right? In the beginning, it has to connect with yourself, right? I mean, at least for me anyway. So, you know, some people say like, oh, how come my Bat looks a bit like you? Because he has a little bit of me inside Bat, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, so I had those feelings of like not being understand. I have those feelings of like, you know, trying to kind of like understand something, or kind of like doing something wrong that I didn't actually realize that I was doing and stuff like that. So those kind of stuff is just feed into what I do. So yeah.
When you received the work, when you received the manuscript, knowing that it was ultimately your decision whether or not you would agree to work on it, did they give you any sort of specs on how many illustrations you'd be creating, or how often they had to occur? How much of that was your feedback, and how much was decided by the publisher?
Yeah, it's actually both. They'll suggest like the number of images to be illustrated in the book, and then I just go like, okay, and then I just see like. You know, like which part of it that's kind of like essential to kind of like for me to come in and to actually support the story, and yeah, but it's pretty much back and forth. So I give them they give me suggestion, and I give them some suggestion too, and then we agree on like you know, the amount of images and where, and then after that I just jump into sketching, and then after that again back and forth. But yeah, with this book, it was surprisingly smooth, because if you remember, Alana, like the arc actually have most of the sketches there. Like,
yes, it does. I think
ready,
that's
right?
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then, which was great, because it really felt like people really could see, you know, from the arc what the book was, you know, what the intention was with the art.
Yeah,
it was really special.
Yeah. And then it wasn't actually kind of like changed too much to the final, so
yeah.
which I think is good. I mean, there's some suggestion to make it better and stuff like that, which I thought was great. But yeah. I'm glad that it's kind of everyone's was kind of like supportive and really excited about them. So yeah,
The whole experience was really smooth. I felt like with all three of us, you know, the editor and you and me, we all really seemed to feel like the same spots really were the right places to put the illustrations.
Yeah,
that's nice. I like that the illustrations, Charles, have, as you were saying, you were trying to communicate, especially in Bat's eyes, the way that he just his expression. I like that you're not giving away plot points in such a way as you are more holding up a mirror for the reader to see themselves in the character of Bat, or to see Bat in that scenario, not just to read whether it's that he's sorting his sister's hair or doing things like that. Just I thought they were just the right touches. They were subtle.
Thank you. Yeah, like I kind of play around with the expression quite a bit on this one. It's quite subtle, but usually when I illustrate something, I try to kind of like remember like real people's faces, because sometimes, like, I mean, in some books it's quite it depends on the story. So if it's a story that's quite realistic, like A Boy Called Bat, right? I want even the expression to be what I so-called like believable, because like kids or adults, they don't smile or laugh all the time, right? That's just not natural. So they will, you know, when they get something that's nice, then they will smile or they will laugh. So you can see like so you can see in this book like, not every single illustration have Bat smiling, right, or have him laughing, which is kind of, yeah, that's will be like, you know, so unrealistic. But those kind of stuff, I think, is subtle. So I hope people don't just go like, "Ooh, I just want to see all the the expression," but they just get by and read the story. You know, the more.
Oh, I was going to say, there's so many great animal expressions in this book, too. Like, I love baby cakes. Baby cakes is the thing that they're around it. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
And yeah, baby cake expression just makes me laugh every time.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, baby cakes. I think like, I was just imagining, like, baby cakes is just, you know, he's just so cute that it's like he just going like, "I'm the cutest." Maybe in his head, like, "I'm the cutest. I don't even have to smile or whatever. I'm just like, I'm just sitting here and everyone pats me and, you know, they love me, and because I'm baby cakes. I love baby cakes so much."
I love him too. I love that picture so much. That makes me happy. If I ever feel sad, I just flip open to that page and I show that picture at every opportunity. I'm like, "You have to see baby cakes." I just, yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it. Going along with the flipping through the pages, Charles, I liked that the things you were pointing to also didn't sort of like give away plot points. It wasn't like, "Let me just skip ahead and see." Cause there's sometimes when you see in the illustrations, like, "Oh, suddenly the character's holding a fishing rod and something crazy is going to happen," or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example without like disparaging any other person's book, but
I know what you mean though. Yeah. Where it's like, "Wait a second, I haven't read about this yet, but now the character's doing that thing that must happen soon."
It must happen. Right. It was just enough. Yeah. They felt like the illustrations needed to be there without feeling like they were betraying the text in any way. Are you both working together for did you say, Alana, that it's more Bat books? It's more in this series?
Yeah, definitely. The second book has a cover, which I love. Book is called Bat and the Waiting Game, and it's the continuing adventures of Bat and you have to read to find out more, I guess. I don't know how much I can say about it.
You're like a good librarian. You have to read to find out.
I know. It's still in copy edit stages, so I haven't seen any illustration, any interior art yet, but I know that it's happening.
Charles, we have Charles on the line. We can confirm that it's happening.
Charles, is it happening? Tell me it's happening.
This is all an elaborate ruse to get Charles to acknowledge that book two is on its way. when you sold,
I won't confirm, but I won't deny it.
There you go.
I was there for an answer.
Well played. Well played.
I know there's a cover. I've seen it. And it's
Alana, when you sold A Boy Called Bat, did you sell it to as a series or as a potential to a series? I know that probably works differently from one book to the next.
Yeah.
But how was this for you?
My ultimate vision originally was a 9-book series. People don't commit to 9 books unless you're J.K. Rowling. Even she didn't get 9 books when she started out, to be fair. But I definitely wanted it to be a series, and Jordan Brown saw the potential in it as well for a series. And so Walden Pond Press committed to 2 books, Bat, you know, A Boy Called Bat, and the sequel, Bat and the Waiting Game. And I'm hopeful that soon we'll have exciting more news to share about future Bat books. Hopefully lots and lots of people will purchase Bat 1 for their schools, libraries, children, Christmas presents, Hanukkah presents, et cetera, and there will be many Bat books to come.
That's sort of the way, if you can give me a peek into publishing, because you've had books that are that are part of like series or groups before. It is sort of that way, isn't it? That they look for a performance. They look for sort of indicators that this is something that we could continue to pursue.
There's the art of writing, and then there's the craft of writing, and then there's the business of writing.
Yes.
And
yes,
those things are separate, but all, you know, inextricably linked. And So the business side, I try not to think too much about, honestly, because it's out of my control. I can only write my best book. And then I send it out into the world and I say, good luck, little book. I love you. and I have to turn my attention to whatever else, you know, I'm creating next. I'm not a good promoter. I'm not a salesperson. So I don't really know how to make a book sell a million copies. I wish I knew, because that would be great. But all I know how to do is, you know, focus on the book in front of me. And, yep. you know, they tell you that nothing sells your backlist like building your front list. So, yes, that's my advice for aspiring writers who have a book out and are worrying about, you know, sales. Is don't worry about, I don't think you can worry about that because you can't do anything about it.
I think the greatest thing that can ever happen to your book is it being read. Because when it's read and someone connects with it, then they share it. And I enjoy, as a librarian and as someone in the library community, seeing just how willing we're all excited to talk about, much like talking about movies we've watched or Netflix shows we're watching. It's no different with books. We get excited and you want someone else to read the book to be excited about it too. I was saying to you, Alana, before we started recording that a lot of my friends in the library community, we've all been talking about A Boy Called Bat, and that's exciting because it's, oh, you read it too. Did you get to this part? Have you read this? And it's fun to share in liking a book together. And then to also
that's so wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then to also be in that part of having it in your classroom, knowing the kids are talking about it. Ultimately, because your book has now released since we've recorded, you will have, you know, there will be classes that hear it as a read aloud, or there will be classes that read it in a reading group. And those sorts of things just give new life and new understanding to the story. And so it's cool. I know that you don't always get to see those being on the side that you're on, but it is neat in our community on the side that we're on to see the way that those ripples are spreading out when a book comes out.
Yeah, that makes me so happy to hear. With most of my books, I don't think about my audience at all when I'm writing. I write, you know, older books. I write books for young adults, and I've written two upper middle grade books. And my focus is really on telling the story that I want to tell and working through whatever issues I'm working through that caused me to write the book. But the entire time I was writing A Boy Called Bat, I was so excited. I was thinking about the reader, and I felt like I was making a story that I couldn't wait for a kid to hold. And I can't wait until kids read this part. I can't wait until kids see baby cakes.
Yeah.
It's really been really,
but I mean,
yes, a wonderful thing. This book has been really, really great for me, for my soul, you know?
I might have to add to that too. It's like, I really feel, when you actually say about the audience, I just want to say, I really feel A Boy Called Bat, this Bat book, right, it's actually not just for kids. That's the thing. It's like it's just telling the story about this person. It's just this person. It's a story about Bat. So when I actually read it, I really enjoy it. Let me tell you something. I'm a really bad reader. I mean, it's not because I really love it. I love books. I have lots of books in my place. But for some reason, I don't know why, since I was a kid, like every time I just read like 10 pages, I just fall asleep. It's my biological thing. But when I'm actually interested in books, in some books, I just read through it. And then this book is just, as I told you before, I read it through. I think it's in one go before. That's awesome. Because it's like knowing someone's new. So I really hope even adults, everyone should actually try to read it. And it's just for everyone, really. It's like knowing someone interesting, you know. It's always exciting.
I like that notion too. The idea that, you know, we say books are written for everyone, but you absolutely find books that are intended for a younger audience that an adult might find something different in, but they're intended for something different. And I want to echo your sentiment, Charles, that Alana, I do feel like you've written a book that, from my perspective, is one that's so great to read aloud because it is an experience between the child and the adult. And there is something that we can both see ourselves reflected in and find. For me, it was finding an awful lot of love in this book, and that made me feel
so great,
really
to hear.
Good.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, there's a lot of love in this book. I love people so much, and I love animals so much, and I feel so grateful. Really, literally, every day I feel so grateful to be alive. And I think that that is sort of an expression of those parts of me, just my gratitude and my curiosity. And Bat feels a lot of those same things in his own way.
I'm glad. Mm. I'm glad he does. Well, I'm grateful to both of you for spending this time with me tonight, for talking
it's such a pleasure.
About this book.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure. I'm glad that the three of us were right there together. I could feel it. I want to end by bringing a question first to you, Charles, and then Alana will end with you to bring it back to our readers, to have a chance for you to speak directly to them. And that is that I'll see this library full of children tomorrow morning. Charles, what message can I bring to them from you?
Yeah, this was a really tricky question. So I kept thinking about it, and it's kind of like, so I'll try my best not to sound really kind of like a cheesy, but this is really what, because it can be something that, I guess, you know, work hard, play hard, be kind, be yourself, but try to know other people too. Mm-hmm. And I guess most importantly, live and love.
Thank you, Charles. That was very kind. Alana, same question. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message I can bring to them from you?
Well, I also thought about this all day, because that was the only question you told us ahead of time that we'd be encountering. And first of all, I'd like to tell children, do you know, children, that gorillas can catch colds and other human illnesses? And did you know that kangaroos cannot jump if you lift their tails?
What?
It is true. And did you know that a herd of unicorns is called a blessing? These are some of the wonderful truths that Bat is a fan of knowing. And I think the reason Bat loves those facts so much is A, because they're about animals, and B, because Bat has such a curious soul. And I guess my best advice for young people, or for really for anybody, is to maintain and cultivate your sense of curiosity, because the world is a beautiful place.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, illustrator PJ Lynch shares Patrick and the President, a beautiful picture book by Ryan Tibbritty about John F. Kennedy's return to Ireland, his ancestral home. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.